Welcome, folks, from Mahoney HQ in Clinton, Missouri, where the deer and turkeys tend to die and the fish tend to fry. I'm your host, Tyler Mahoney, joined by my good friend, Ryan Milashevsky. Thanks for joining in. Well, it's good to be back on another episode of the Mahoney Outdoors podcast. This is our fourth episode. It's been a few weeks since we did our last one, but we've been pretty dang busy since September started. Dove season started here in Missouri on September 1st, and then the next weekend after that, September 11th weekend, Milo and I were down in a place called Pulaski County in Missouri on our annual Missouri Outdoor Communicators trip, and it was a hell of a time. Got to float down the Gasconade River. Really, really fun time, and great fishing, too. Got a lot of smallies.
Yeah, we had a good time down there, and we're going to talk about that a little more in the podcast. We're going to start it off with talking about a little dove hunting and our adventures. Then we're going to talk about the Under Armour controversy, which
right. We
wrote a big article about. Seemed to be forgotten already.
Right.
Bring that up.
Yeah, so we're going to touch on all of that. The Under Armour thing, and most everything we talk about, we also post about online at MahoneyOutdoors.com. So make sure to check us out. And also check us out on social media. We have a Facebook account, Instagram, and Twitter, the at Mahoney Outdoors. You can find us there. We post some pretty interesting stuff. We try to be entertaining, educational, and funny sometimes too. So we try. That's the operative word. But anyhow, back to dove hunting. It's getting towards the end of September, but hopefully a lot of you guys got to get out and enjoy what, you know, the United States has to offer. An unbelievable dove population. We hunted some public land, Platte Falls Conservation Area to be exact, and I have no problem sharing the honey hole. That's what I'm all about, is sharing information with everyone, because if you've ever followed us on social media, you see us use the hashtag You Can Do It Too. We're all about sharing everything we know so that everyone can do exactly what we do. And Milo didn't get a chance to get out on opening day, but I got out on opening day with a good friend of ours, David Gray, who runs sharetheoutdoors.com, started Carbon X Fishing Rods, and owned the very first Bass Pro in Kansas City. It was called Bass Pro of Grandview, and he and I have been going dove hunting quite a bit the last couple years, and shot a limit on opening day out in Platte Falls. And it's really awesome. Here in Missouri, they print maps of all the conservation areas that have dove hunting available, and they show you exactly where their sunflower fields are on the map. If you're around Missouri or resident of Missouri, it's a really great resource to figure out what is available to you. It really wasn't packed where we were at on opening day. There was about a 5 to 10 acre field we were sitting over, and there's maybe 12 hunters, and a lot of people got a lot of shooting in. It was a pretty good time.
Yeah, and I went with Tyler the second day, September 2nd. Tyler and David were out there, and there was only 5 guys in the field, and if I was a better shot, or if we were all better shots, we easily could have had a limit, probably.
Yeah, we would have had been shooting pretty good to get a limit, although we definitely, I ended up with 6, you ended up with 3 or 4.
Yeah.
The second day in public land areas falls off a lot because of how much pressure the doves get on opening day, but still a pretty decent second day for as pressured as it was. The problem with dove hunting public land is everyone hunts them really early in the morning. They hunt them all day, and it just spooks them out of there like crazy. Whereas if you had private areas to go, David is an avid dove hunter, and in the past he's talked about how they've managed all kinds of dove areas on private land and how they'd have rules where on opening day they wouldn't go in and hunt until 3 o'clock, and they'd only hunt an hour until 4. And a lot of times, only 10% of the doves are flying at that time. So you end up getting pretty close to a limit, if not a limit, and that's 10% of the doves. So the rest of the doves end up flying the rest of the day. They never even really knew that you were around. And so it helps keep doves in the area, and it allows for a lot more hunting for a much more extended period.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I do want to highlight is I live in Kansas now, so I had to buy a non-resident tag to be able to hunt, but Missouri Conservation Department has done a great job at making that really easy and accessible to anybody through their hunting app and online. So I just was able to buy my bird hunting permit and then a daily tag, which was like $5 or something like that. I printed it out at work and it was good to go.
So another big area that I went to a few days after opening day was down around Truman Lake. They have a lot of conservation areas down there, thousands and thousands of acres. And there was about 23 fields that they had planted, and these were giant fields. Every single one of them was around 20-plus acres. Biggest one probably being around 30 or 40. And there was very few people there on opening weekend. I went. A lot of the doves have been kind of spooked out. It was really hot, but I'd imagine on opening day it had to be a hell of a time because those fields were incredible. And I was watching these two guys, so they cut the sunflower fields in rows where there'll be cut sunflowers and then standing sunflowers and cut and then standing and so on and so forth. And I was watching these two guys just walk through the non-cut stuff and flushing 10 to 15 doves at a time. And they were actually getting some pretty good shooting, and I just kind of stayed off to the side of them, and I got some pretty decent shooting in as well because of what they were doing. So it was an interesting tactic that I hadn't witnessed before until then, and it makes a lot of sense. When they're not flying, they come in and they're feeding in there, and you can spook them up and still have some good shooting. The recipe, my go-to recipe for doves, I just throw them on the grill. A lot of times, I just put a piece of bacon around them and put them on the grill, and that's enough for me. Other people like to throw cream cheese in there and also some jalapenos and just kind of cut the breast a little bit and put that in there. I just love the dove meat a lot. Now, granted, it's not a lot, so it really helps if you do get a limit in order to get a pretty nice little appetizer or, you know, a one-person meal. It could be about six or seven of them, but they are just damn good. It's one of my favorite things to eat.
Yeah, dove is great, and one thing to definitely look out for is the weather here. Coming up this weekend, we're going to have a 35-degree drop in temperature, and that's sure to send doves down from the north. So you get that influx in the first part of September, opening day, opening week, and then it kind of dies off. But I guarantee this weekend we're going to have some doves flying down, as well as teal, if you're into that too.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of our buddies getting just hammering the teal. They are expert hunters, and they have been doing real well on the teal. That's something that we haven't really gotten into. We're much more so the dove and the deer. It's kind of weird. It seems like you're either a duck hunter or a deer hunter. And if you prefer duck hunting, you'll go deer hunting sometimes and you enjoy it, but duck hunting is for you. For me, deer hunting has always been my go-to. In my mind, killing a duck, I'm sure, is great, and the social experience is a whole lot different than sitting in a tree stand by yourself. But just the thought of taking down an old, big, mature buck, just that satisfaction of going head-to-head with an individual animal, it just does it a lot more for me than it does, you know, taking out the ducks. But regardless, everyone has their thing, and it's all fun nonetheless. So anyhow, now we've talked about some dove hunting, duck hunting. I wanted to bring up a pretty big topic that came up about a month and a half ago. It was something I wrote my longest story I've ever written about because I felt very passionately about it. It's this Under Armour controversy, and some people still haven't heard about this just because it didn't get widely publicized. It seemed to fall out of the news pretty quick, but for a week there it was leading major news stations, getting brought up on CNN and Fox. And it's all about how there was this hunter who killed a bear in Canada legally with a spear, and they filmed it. And the hunter, his wife was filming, and his wife is sponsored by Under Armour. And after the fact, after they had posted the video and everything, Under Armour, like 3 months later, the video went viral out of nowhere. All these anti-hunters started just vilifying Under Armour, telling them to drop them and how inhumane, blah, blah, blah. And so Under Armour caved in and basically dropped Sarah Bomer, the sponsored hunter, as one of their sponsored athletes. Basically, Under Armour came out and said they don't support that form of hunting. It was reckless, and they support all... This was funny. It's like they contradict themselves in their own statement. That we support all hunting that follows state, federal, and whatever guidelines, but we don't support this. It's like, what are you talking about? How can you say that you support hunting and then not support this legal, completely legal form of hunting? I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's pretty egregious how they just kind of threw her under the bus and caved to the anti-hunters, just up their butts, technically, just wanting them to drop her. I just have a problem with the legality of it. A lot of people were upset about the celebration that occurred afterwards.
In the video, the way he celebrated after he speared the animal?
Yeah, and I really didn't have a problem with it. You know, people celebrate in their own way, and I know there's a lot of, you know, reverence for the animal that needs to be had, but You know, this guy trained for months with a spear, took the bear legally. It didn't suffer. It died within 60 yards is what they...
He was on the ground
at,
I think it was 10 or 12 yards, speared this bear. When you want to talk about an adrenaline rush, how are you able to control your emotions after you successfully, you know, get a good hit on one? I mean, I'd be freaking out like he was, and he wasn't even that bad. We've seen a lot worse examples. Definitely. You know, some of the stuff we were talking about was just some of these people that, you know, they shoot a deer at 100 yards with a rifle over a corn feeder in Texas, and then they sit there and like, thank God, thank you, Lord, this was just, I'm so blessed. And it's like, okay, it's just a little much. That they, you know, they bring that type of thing up in their celebration, you know, but it's not okay for this guy to just be pumped up after he speared a bear. And, you know, of course, none of it went to waste. It all got donated and everything else. So I just really, it really pissed me off. And what's amazing, completely, I guess it's a consequence of the situation. There's a bunch of other hunters that are sponsored by Under Armour that all of a sudden the public was wanting to demand what their stance was on it, because the public, the general hunting population was like, you know, if we support you guys and follow your stuff, you know, how do you feel about Under Armour doing this if you're going to be a big representative for us in hunting? And some of them didn't acknowledge it at all. One of them, Cameron Haynes, came out and said, you know, he didn't agree with the way it was celebrated and that we need to be vigilant about the stuff we post on social media, which is true. We definitely have to be aware of how things are portrayed to non-hunters who don't understand what we do. But at the same time, I disagree completely with his premise that he didn't have a problem with Under Armour's decision, because it was a legal hunt. And if you're going to make money off the hunting industry and from people who hunt, I just feel like you as a company should support all legal hunting. And Under Armour didn't do that. And it was kind of a joke on their Facebook page how they were responding to all the anti-hunter comments, but they wouldn't respond to hunters commenting. And it was just a joke. And I think they're a joke of a company for hunters. And not that, I guess, I'm not saying you're a bad person if you still buy Under Armour stuff, but for me and Milo and everyone that we know, for the most part, we do have Under Armour stuff. It's not like we're going to just go burn it. It's expensive stuff. Maybe we'll sell it, but it's one of those things we're not going to go out of our way anymore to, you know, give our money to that company, plain and simple.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely good gear, but I'm not going to buy any more Under Armour stuff right now. And I think the major thing that really ticked me off is it's kind of a theme in hunting right now for everybody is the solidarity of hunters and the, you know, hunters as a group, as a part of society, where, you know, we're constantly getting attacked by the anti-hunters. And in order to stand together, we have to back legal hunting. It was a legal hunt. It's much like the Cecil Lion, the lion thing last year, the dentist shot. It was a legal hunt, had the right tags, did everything correctly. And, you know, people actually stood behind him. But now, this one thing, we're just splitting each other up. It's just a big schism between everybody. And I think we just need to stick together as hunters and defend our right to hunt. And our job as communicators is to portray that in a good way. And some people took offense, I guess, to the way it was portrayed. But, I didn't. I didn't see anything wrong with it. And I think for a company to just drop one of their sponsored athletes like that, based on the pressure they got.
All it took was 4,000 signatures on a petition, and they just dropped them. And then a hunter started a petition and got 10,000 signatures really quickly, and Under Armour hasn't responded at all. Now, in the Cecil the Lion case, there was some more sketchy details regarding the guide and how he lured the lion. But
it wasn't the hunter, though.
But it wasn't the hunter. And in this case, I mean, it was all completely legal. There was no sketchy anything about this situation. So it, all in all, just a bad situation. I was really disappointed in people like the Shockies, who I watch their stuff a lot, and they, Jim Shockey got on Facebook, made some posts about how we all just need to move on. And I'm like, really? It's just... It's a travesty, really, just how much money talks.
Yeah.
And it really made me quite upset. But like I said, I've got a really long piece written on this on MahoneyOutdoors.com. You can see the video. I've got a link to it in the article. So you can go decide for yourself. Rather than just listening to us give our opinion, you can go watch it for yourself and come to your own conclusion. But our conclusion is, regardless of how you feel about the way you celebrated, it was legal, and we need to support all legal hunting, plain and simple. Well, we're getting to the end of this first segment here. We're going to go ahead and take a break and shift into story time this week. And I'm going to go ahead and read that to you, and then we'll get back into it in segment two, talk a little bit more about our trip to Pulaski County, and then get into some early season deer hunting tips and tactics and just experiential things we have gone through ourselves and maybe you guys might find valuable as well. So anyhow, here we go with story time. Have you ever been turkey hunting and encountered a tom that just wouldn't gobble? You know he's around, but he doesn't respond to anything you throw at him. He seems weary of calls and suspicious of decoys. There are several reasons he might be acting this way. Could he possibly be a subordinate tom that wants to avoid any confrontation? Maybe he's just downright smart from watching all his other buddies singing away and slowly disappearing from the woods. Regardless, the one thing you know for sure is he is nearly impossible to kill. No matter what you try, he can't be enticed. It's one of the more famous causes for turkey hunting frustration. However, killing this type of bird can be done, and I'm going to tell you how. The 2014 season started off unbelievably with several opening day birds killed in our group. The weather seemed to cooperate a lot more so than other springs. I had planned to kill my next bird on a media trip to Eminence, Missouri in the second week, but unfortunately couldn't get it done. It wasn't for lack of opportunities, though. The famous turkey slayer Mossberg was missing from my arsenal on that trip because my dad wanted my sister to use it for her hunt at Mahoney HQ during the same time. I was left with another shotgun that just didn't have the same turkey-killing vibes. That's just my excuse, at least, for any misses that may or may not have occurred on the Eminence trip. But I digress. Over the course of the next 2 weeks after opening day, my dad and I observed a lone gobbler in one of our best fields. He was always roosted in the same place and would rarely gobble. My dad hunted this particular bird with several people, and no matter what they tried, he would not come in. No calling or combination of decoys could pique his interest. He acted outright spooked most of the time. However, his pattern became clear after multiple days of observation. He would roost on us, gobble maybe once, most of the time not at all, then fly down and make a beeline for our neighbors to the east. When I returned from Eminence, we put together a plan to take this gobbler down. It was a simple one. Put the blind at the corner of the timber where he always walked every morning towards the neighbors and try to intercept him. We set up the blind about 5 days before we hunted him. Finally, the hunt arrived. My dad and I were in the blind and ready to go by 5:30. Shooting time started close to 5:50. Gobblers were sounding off across the field from us almost immediately. There was not a peep coming from the area where we believed the silent tom liked to roost, and we hadn't roosted him the night before, so we weren't sure if he really was there. Knowing it was my last day of turkey hunting in Missouri, I was trying to convince my dad to let me start calling to the other ones not very far away. He remained adamant that we stay silent and wait. I argued we didn't even know whether this bird was even there or not. I didn't want my last day to end up a waste because of a blown opportunity. Suddenly, in the most serendipitous way possible, we heard loud wings flapping through the trees where we thought the silent tom had roosted. A dark black body glided out and landed in the field about 80 yards away. He stood on alert, surveying his surroundings. My dad raised his binoculars. It was the silent tom. Even though we scouted this bird for 2 weeks, we still almost couldn't believe our own eyes. We had walked almost directly underneath him on our trip into the blind that morning. After a tense minute or so, the tom committed to his morning ritual and headed right towards us. He closed the distance fast and was in range for about 20 seconds before I could see him from my angle. My dad kept whispering, "You better shoot. You better shoot. He's gonna spook. You better shoot." But I couldn't see him with the way the windows were open in the blind. "Shh," I said, as his bright red head finally popped into view. With my turkey slayer in my hands once again, my second tag was filled at 6:01 a.m. Our plan to intercept him worked to perfection, and the silent tom had met his maker. So I went ahead and read a spring hunting, turkey hunting story for a couple of reasons. One, although it might not seem relevant because it's not spring, it's fall, I think it is because it's a great example of the silent tom and how toms in the fall really are. They're not as vocal in terms of gobbling, and they will gobble sometimes, but really you have to rely on patterning them, whether or not it's with observation or trail cameras, and it just goes to show you can set up and sit and wait and kill that bad boy that's silent a lot of the time, and that's what ended up working out in this story. And it's something that you can do in the spring or the fall, and I plan on doing it here in the next couple of weeks. We've got trail cameras out with turkeys showing up at this one spot between 2 and 3 o'clock almost every day. It is incredible how on a pattern they are right now. So I'm hoping that they give me a chance at them with a bow. But anyhow, that was that, and now we are going to get into a couple more topics, and we'll close out the podcast. But we wanted to talk about Pulaski County and just some early season deer hunting related topics. So we'll start with Pulaski County. This, like we talked about in the beginning, it's our annual trip with the Missouri Outdoor Communicators. Milo and I are both members, and it's basically an organization filled with media members, whether they're writers, photographers, journalists, magazine editors, radio, TV. They do it all, and it's a great group of guys. We were down in Pulaski County. It's about central Missouri, a little bit south. We were in a small town called Waynesville, and it was an incredible time because it's very, very close to the Gasconade and Big Piney Rivers. It's also close to the what they call the Ruby-Doo Creek. Is that right?
Ruby-Doo
Creek?
Ruby-Doo, yeah.
And the big French name there. And what incredible fishing, great scenery. It's down in the heart of the Ozark Mountains. And we caught the hell out of the smallmouths.
Yeah, we had a great time fishing. Of course, we did other things, but to us, the outdoor aspect is what is the draw. And we were able to fish, and we actually brought one of our good friends, Ryan Haverstick, down and as a guest, and he was able to fish for smallmouths for the first time and ended up catching quite a few. He caught his first one. It was about a 16-incher, and the first one I caught was about 5 inches, so not a bad way to start. Just the scenery was beautiful, and just the floating and just the smallmouth. It's just something to behold when you go out there.
So the one thing that struck me quite obvious, so if you're familiar with Missouri rivers at all, the one I floated a lot is the Niangua River, and the trees really cover up a lot of your view of any surrounding areas and the hills and the mountains. And you know, the Gasconade, the one we floated on a Sunday, which, by the way, besides our group on the water, there was about maybe 2 or 3 other groups on the water. It was very peaceful, very quiet. But regardless, the Gasconade was a lot more open. It wasn't completely encapsulated by trees, so you could see far into the Ozark Mountains over these huge cliffs, these bluffs, these rocky bluffs. Made for very scenic views. If you're a photographer, it made for some very, very cool shots. And you know, the structure along the river in the middle and on the sides was just great for fishing, like Milo was talking about. We caught smallmouth, we caught the Kentucky largemouth, we caught regular largemouth, caught some goggle eyes and some sunfish as well. And on Sunday, I used a Zara Spook, I used a Rapala shad wrap, I used a little jig, bass jig, and I used a little crappie jig. And I caught fish on every single type of lure. And I don't consider myself an expert by any means, and I think it's pretty indicative that you could pretty much throw anything and have a good chance of catching some kind of fish as you go. And it was just so, so calm floating down the river. I had a great time. We didn't float the Big Piney. Sounds like there's some pretty good fishing on the Big Piney. We were fishing the Gasconade, and it was great. Now, the Ruby-Doo, Milo, have you ever fished that? It sounds like the Ruby-Doo is the one with the trout in it. We didn't get a chance to fish that. Do you know much about the Ruby-Doo?
I've never fished it, but I know it is a good trout fishery. I believe it's a red ribbon trout area in Missouri. So Missouri has different classes, blue ribbon, white ribbon, red ribbon. And I think the Ruby-Doo is a red ribbon. And it's from what I hear, it's a really good trout fishery if you can get out there at the right times and the right sections of the creek. And, you know, it's something I definitely like to go back to Pulaski County and do. It's much like the Gasconade, what we floated. Very open, great scenery. Not a whole lot of pressure from what I know. And I think it's one of those things where you could just go out there and wade or float and have a good time.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's definitely an area I want to explore more. One of the other things we came across, it wasn't part of our scheduled activities, but there was this little restaurant right across from our hotel called Mama Mia's.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, they were a Greek restaurant, and they were voted best in Pulaski County, which I thought was kind of funny because I can't imagine there's a lot of competition down there for Greek food, but maybe there is. Regardless, I believe them when they talk about being voted best in Pulaski County. They're probably best in the entire region because it was unbelievable.
Incredible
Euro. You know, for the price, they've packed it full of meat, and oh my gosh, it's making my mouth water right now just thinking about it. But I had it a couple of times while we were there, and it was really cool. It's a neat little, like, just kind of a hole-in-the-wall kind of thing.
Kind of like a diner.
Right.
Like a Greek diner.
And it maybe seats 10 people at the most inside. There's three employees. They all came out and talked to us to see, you know, what we thought, if we were enjoying it, and that kind of thing. And it was just, it was a really cool, like, one of those classic small town type of deals. Yeah. And strongly recommend going there. It was so great for me. I went up on Google and I wrote a Google review for them because I felt compelled. It was just such a great experience and great food. I felt like they deserved it. So check them out, Mama Mia's. It's just a small town restaurant, little diner in Waynesville, Missouri, and it's worth a stop if you're passing through the area. Was there anything else that you wanted to add other than what we were talking about with the rivers?
No, I just definitely like to echo the Mamma Mia's. That was one of the best Euros I've ever had. Yeah. Should definitely stop there. Yeah. It's right off the highway, too, so right. It's convenient.
The other great thing about this conference, not only were we hanging out with really great friends, but they have this auction that goes on throughout the weekend.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's great.
I picked up a brand new Browning trail camera that's normally right around $200. I got it for about $100. And it is really cool. I just hung it up this past weekend. It's got a nice LCD screen on it so that when you turn it on, you can see exactly. It shows you exactly what it's pointing at in the video screen. It makes it very easy to figure out, okay, this is exactly where I want it placed and pointing. And I'm looking forward to it. It's got super high def video, and I'm looking forward to see what it has on there. I'm going to be hopefully checking it within the next few days. But anyhow, let's get into, now that we've touched on Pulaski County a little bit, let's get into some of the early season deer tactics and observations and just talk, really, about early season deer hunting. Milo, the past couple years, has done a segment on MahoneyOutdoors.com called Whitetail Weekly with Ryan Milosheski. And he gets on there and gives you a weekly update on deer activity, movement, you know, tips on what to do that week. It's really a neat little piece, and he includes some fun little, you know, just kind of interesting tidbits at the end of the story too that are just completely unrelated to the content. It just very what would you call it? Fun facts,
yeah,
I guess.
I call them my random thoughts.
Random thoughts, yeah. And it's really interesting stuff. So I'm gonna let Milo talk a lot about that because he's the one that really works on that. My thoughts on early season deer hunting, as much as I love to deer hunt, I hate mosquitoes. I hate sweating my butt off. It's hard pressed, unless I've got a buck I know he's showing up every day at the same spot. Hard pressed to get me in the woods before late October.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, but I always like to, you know, cure the itch and get out there initially for a few days in September. You know, I've sweated a lot early on here and saw some does. A lot of the deer have gone nocturnal just because of the temperature. It's in the 90s right now in Kansas City area, and it's just suppressing the movement quite a bit according to our cameras. But yeah, the Whitetail Weeklies, so a lot of times in the early season, I don't do it every week, so it's kind of a, you know, wrong name. But during, you know, October, November, once we get into the breeding season and the rut, you know, things are changing week by week. So I definitely do a new one every week. But yeah, I go in there and I talk about just random tips and tactics that I've learned, Tyler's learned, we've all learned over the past, you know, 10, 15 years of hunting. And, you know, kind of give you some guidance on what to do that certain week if you're going to be out there hunting. And then, you know, I do add the random thoughts section. And usually it's just about nature in general. I usually try to tie it to the time of year. So if it's in September, I talk about things that are happening in September. So deer molting, for one, turkeys, you know, starting to feed on certain things, you know, leaves changing in the fall, why they change, which ones change first. But yeah, I have a real fun time writing it. You know, I've gotten a lot of good feedback from it, and I think people like it, and I'm going to continue to do it. Some of the things I highlighted this week, and you can check it out on MahoneyOutdoors.com or our Facebook page, is just hunting the evening. I think, and you might agree with me here, that if you're going to hunt in the early season, it's pretty worthless to hunt in the morning. The deer are just in bed by the time the sun comes up. Simple as that, especially when it's hot like this. You know, our cameras are showing that they're out feeding until about 6:30 in the morning, and then they're going to bed and not getting up until 5 or 6 in the afternoon, at least coming out to feed. So hunting in the afternoon is the ticket, but, you know, you got to take your scent control serious this time of year because you could easily work up a smell.
Yeah, you know, for me, I love working the cameras this time of year. I don't go in very often, every couple of weeks, just to see what's going on. I just hate sweating. Like I said, walking in. I do have a wagon this year that it's a camo wagon from Academy Sports that I'm going to be carrying in all my equipment. Hopefully it's going to make my walks a little easier. But I love the experience when it gets kind of cool and you got the fires going in the evening. You got drinking your cold beer. You shoot a deer and it's hanging up overnight and you're just kind of letting them hang there. And, you know, you don't feel like you're sweating like crazy when you're cleaning it and all that kind of stuff. I just, I love the deer hunting experience a lot more when it's cooler. And it just gets to be kind of miserable when it's hot. Now, it sometimes can be a huge payoff if you've got one patterned. Yeah. By all means, you know, if you've got one patterned, get in there after them. But you just want to be careful not to hunt them too hard here early in the early season, because if you get in there too much, you know, when the rut and all that kind of stuff comes around, they become aware of human pressure, plain and simple. That's what we talk about, is eliminating human pressure as much as possible. And just early season, make sure you're varying your entrance and exit routes, you're following the wind. Don't go into your best spot until the most ideal time possible, where the wind's going to be perfect, the weather's going to be perfect, and you know the deer, based on pictures, has been up on his feet. You just want to save your good spot. That's why I always save my best spot for late October. Yeah. And if I wouldn't have had a mess up, I would have killed the biggest buck of my life on my best spot on the very first night that I hunted him with a bow 2 years ago. And ultimately ended up getting him with the rifle. But I should have had him that first night. And it was all because I waited for the ideal condition. And it worked out. It worked out pretty great, other than I couldn't get the shot off. So it really, human pressure. Remember that. Reduce human pressure. And that means not just entry and exit routes. It means don't be driving your four-wheelers around all the time and gunning it and tearing up the place. It means walking quite a bit when you can, so you can eliminate any kind of noise pollution that isn't natural in the woods. Those are very big things, and people really, they just don't appreciate how much it impacts the deer. And it's why, even though we have a smaller piece of property that we hunt at Mahoney HQ, about 280 acres, and we can't control really if the deer stay on our place, we still keep them on our place because of reducing the human pressure and making them feel safe on our property. So that's kind of my thoughts on everything. Unless I get a good deer on the cameras, I'm on a mission to kill a 170 plus. Right now we haven't, or just a mature buck. And right now we've got maybe one or two mature bucks, nothing over the 170 range. But I'm just on a mission to go head-to-head with one of those big boys, and I'm going to be holding out. It's just amazing, the feeling you have when you kill a 5.5-year-old buck or older. Just the sense of satisfaction that this guy was the king. He lived a long life. It just incredible feeling to know you outwitted this creature that is designed to escape you. So kind of a cool feeling. It goes back to what I was talking about earlier, the satisfaction of getting that big buck over things like a duck or a dove. It does it a lot more for me. Even if it is a little more of an isolated or secluded hunt, it just does it a lot more. So I'm looking forward to that feeling again, and it's coming up soon. But until then, I'll be bow hunting a little bit, mostly for turkeys, and I'm gonna get out with a shotgun too. I've got these turkeys patterned. They're showing up at a spot 2 to 3 o'clock on a freaking dime almost every day in this one spot, big old toms. So I'm gonna give it a shot, no pun intended, and we'll see what we can do. But that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to the bigger fish starting to bite here, last big bite before feast. It gets real cold, and man, it's gonna be a fun fall.
Yeah, today is the first day of fall. You wouldn't know it by the temperature. 94, I think, was the high today. Yeah, I mean, it's here. I mean, once the first day of fall hits, you know, everything gets great in the woods, in the minds of outdoorsmen and in the woods. One thing I do want to echo real quick is about eliminating the human pressure. And one of the things we're doing, I hunt at Caleb Phillippe's farm in Kansas. We're staying to the perimeter. I think that's one of the biggest things you can do in the early season. You mentioned your best stands are, you know, you save. And those are usually the ones that are in the interior travel routes of your property.
Yep.
So we're just staying to the perimeter, perimeter stands, just kind of take an inventory. You know, if a doe walks by, I'll take a shot. But yeah, we're just checking the cameras, you know, whenever we go in and out. We're not going in there unnecessarily, and sticking to the perimeter of the property and just seeing what's out there and kind of curing the itch. And now we're just kind of waiting for the right weather. But yeah, early season is tough, but it's fall and I'm ready to do some fishing and hunting as much as I can. Summer's over. A lot of people love summer, not me. I love fall.
Yep, same for me. I'm going up to Minnesota the first weekend of October to visit with my cousin Ryan Mahoney, who's an expert fisherman. We're going to be going after some muskies, and hopefully we'll get on those and have some good stuff to talk about here later on in the month of October as well. I know he had 3 muskies on last night. They all got off on Minnetonka up there, so should be pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to it. We're looking forward to having a lot more great content to come for you guys. If you have anything specific you would like us to cover, feel free to, you know, shoot us a message on the website, MahoneyOutdoors.com. We have a contact page, or social media is even better. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can reach us very quickly there as well. We love to respond and just answer anything we can. And of course, we thank you for tuning in and participating and listening. It's what makes it fun for us to know, you know, people are listening, and it's just a lot of fun in general to sit and talk about the stuff that we love to do, and we know that you guys love to do as well. So we'll look forward to talking to you guys here on the next episode. Until then, thanks for tuning in today.